Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed clinical nutritionist, and I'm here today with Dr. Herb Slavin. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Hi, Janet.
And I know, as usual, you have a very interesting topic for our discussion today, a topic that will make a difference in people's lives.
Over the years, we've spoken about this topic a lot and coming at it from different directions. And I'm specifically talking about mammograms and breast cancer. But today's headline sort of starts out with the United States spends $4 billion a year from false positive mammograms and breast cancer overdiagnosis.
Very, very important for people to understand that whole business of diagnosing breast diseases. Unfortunately, the current way medicine is practiced leaves a lot to be desired.
So what does this mean? So it probably means that the mammogram is a great way to make money, but it's not a great way to help patients. So a false positive test means you had a mammogram. Something in the mammogram suggested you may have a problem, and then we're going to send you for a biopsy. And I think that's probably where all this money is being spent, on biopsies that were done based on a false positive mammogram.
It's very, very interesting, because when you think about it, a mammogram is an X-ray, and you certainly are being exposed to radiation. And again, when you think some more about it, this whole concept of an X-ray for soft tissue, what is the thing that they're going, that an X-ray is able to pick up most efficiently? And it's calcification. So here are calcifications in the breast that turn up a so-called abnormal mammogram, but with regard to truly diagnosing dysfunction within the breast tissue, it's certainly not the most efficient way.
Well, when you talk about dysfunction, you're really talking about early detection. That is not achieved with a mammogram. You know, mammograms are looking for cancer. They're not looking for anything else. They're not looking for a woman at risk of developing cancer. They're looking at women who have already developed cancer. And in an earlier discussion today, we were talking about or trying to answer the question, when does cancer begin? Does it begin when your mammogram says you've got it?
By far. Rather than categorizing mammography as a means of early detection, the truth of the matter is, once you investigate the situation, it is late detection.
Now, that go back to the $4 billion again, and this is not a new result. We've known for a long time that there's a lot of money being wasted on not just on unnecessary medical testing. It's just tests that really don't meet a high standard, because it just doesn't give you the information you need to stay healthy. It gives the information the medical profession needs to make money, and that's why it continues. But it's not about getting better results. They did a review of women getting mammograms for breast screening for cancer, and it led to a 30% rate of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. And the overtreatment is the scary part. Are they actually treating women for breast cancer that don't really have it? And by the way, mammograms increase your risk of developing breast cancer by about 0.5%. And some people say every time you get a mammogram, it increases it slightly, maybe by 1%.
And so it's very, very interesting what the recommendation is. It was established a number of years ago to make the recommendation that any woman over the age of 40 should have an annual mammogram. Then there was a little bit of a discussion about that, and the recommendation was revised to say women over the age of 50 were at greater risk for developing breast cancer, and they should be the ones having an annual mammogram. So some of the women, possibly those who have started at the age of 40 to have an annual mammogram, that 1% a year increase of cancer risk, very, very scary area to consider. And it's interesting because I have a 35-year-old friend, and she was just recommended by her gynecologist at 35 to begin having an annual mammogram. And I said that she might consider about her exposure to radiation, and she said, well, the doctor said.
Well, maybe this bit of information will change her mind. Now, I understand why people go for mammograms. They want that reassurance they don't have breast cancer. It's a scary thought that you might develop breast cancer, and you've been told you want to catch it early. And after all, don't they have the slogan, mammograms save lives?
Apparently, they do have that slogan, Dr. Slavin, but if people truly knew the information that they should have with regard to prevention, maybe they wouldn't be dealing with so much fear.
Well, here's something that people need to know about. Last year, one of the largest and longest studies of mammography to date, involving 90,000 women followed for 25 years, found that mammograms have absolutely no impact on breast cancer mortality. And that was reported in the New York Times. You know, when the New York Times reports it, they're just reporting the study that was published. And, you know, so let me repeat it. Mammograms don't save lives.
Wow. Okay, that has to be a really shocking statement for a lot of our listeners, that they don't save lives. So in spite of the recommendation that women have this annual mammogram, when the cancer is detected, it does not necessarily create a better outcome.
Well, here's another fact. The screening does do harm. Aside from the psychological harm it does, remember we mentioned all those false positives that women have put through additional testing. 1 in 5 cancers found with mammography and treated was not a threat to the woman's health and did not need treatment such as chemotherapy, surgery, or radiation.
Okay, so are you referencing ductal carcinoma in situ? Because that's a diagnosis that very frequently women who come to see me with regard to nutrition counseling, they tell me that's their diagnosis. And unfortunately, they tend to have a very frightening discussion with their physicians when the results of the mammography and the results of the biopsy are discussed.
Well, you mentioned earlier mammograms increase your risk of breast cancer. Well, there was a study published in The Lancet in 2011, and it demonstrated for the first time that women who received the most breast screenings had a higher cumulative incidence of invasive breast cancer. Now, you were just talking about ductal carcinoma in situ.
Right.
Meaning non-invasive.
Right.
Now, if you want to take a non-invasive, non-threatening breast cancer and make it invasive, do your yearly mammogram.
And then follow that annual mammogram with a biopsy.
And they compared, by the way, the women getting the yearly mammograms with the women not getting any mammograms. And those women did not develop the invasive breast cancers like the women getting it. So you're making your problem more severe with exposure to radiation and mammograms.
Dr. Slavin, would you say that exposure to that ionizing radiation would potentially contribute to inflammation, potentially contribute to a change in how your immune system responded? What impact might that radiation have on the health of very, very delicate, hormonally sensitive breast tissue?
Well, there are other factors for developing breast cancer besides exposure to the ionizing radiation. But I think even mainstream medicine would agree that all of us are exposed to cancer cells.
Right.
And our body's immune system knows how to detect them and kill them. What ionizing radiation does is suppresses your own immune system cells from doing that.
Wow.
So it's...
very important information for our listeners, I think.
So now that we've hopefully... I don't expect...
we've gotten their attention.
I don't expect to convince you not to have mammograms, but I hope you would do a little of your own research. Go online. Google something like, are mammograms effective in saving lives?
Interesting. Okay.
Or do mammograms increase the risk of breast cancer? I mean, when I, see those headlines, you have to wonder, why would anybody recommend mammograms when there are better ways of imaging a woman's breast that can detect a problem, sometimes earlier before a mammogram would.
So let's discuss some of those options for women, because I think a lot of times the women are not being given this information by their doctors.
Well, briefly, what happens when a breast is being overstimulated, and usually that's from hormones, if you measure the temperature, you'll see hot spots in the breast. And that just means the metabolic rate in the breast tissue is increased, and that increases the risk of breast cancer.
So our listeners are going to be saying, well, how do you measure temperature changes in breast tissue?
And that's where thermography comes in. The breast really should be cool and symmetrical in temperature. If you don't see that, and this is one of the things I explain to patients who have thermography, I explain just what their test means so they understand it. Thermography is not about diagnosing breast cancer. It's about diagnosing abnormalities in tissue function. And then you can go on from there. If it's a slight abnormality, usually it just means you need to balance your hormones better. If it's a more severe abnormality, we skip a mammogram and we go to a breast MRI.
Okay, where might an ultrasound fall in this whole diagnostic picture?
An ultrasound can be helpful, not as good as an MRI, but it's no radiation, no compression, and it's a lot less expensive than an MRI. So you can get some information from an ultrasound with regard to the presence of a mass. It'll tell you whether it's solid or cystic.
Okay. And one of the things that you mentioned had to do with hormones, and around the ages, let's say between 45 and 55, there are pretty significant changes in hormone ratios. Do you want to talk a little bit about how those ratios change at that age and what's protective, what is potentially leading to dysfunction in the breast tissue?
Well, typically, we talk about hormone balance, and when we talk about that, it's about how much estrogen and progesterone you have. And what when we talk about hormone imbalance, we're talking about the estrogen and progesterone ratios. And when someone has estrogen dominance or they're out of balance, it usually means they don't have enough progesterone to balance the amount of estrogen that their body is making.
Do they have to know the different types of estrogen that are circulating in their bodies? And might there be certain dangers that become obvious when they are dealing with higher levels, say, of estrone than of estradiol and estriol?
Well, that really... It's not that important. You can measure the estriol, estradiol, and estrone. The major or the estrogen that's in the greatest amount is the estradiol.
Right.
And the other ones will just be proportionally less. So you can usually just measure one, but what you're really interested in is seeing that there's enough progesterone. The reason women get estrogen dominance is because they're under stress.
Wow. Okay. So is it actual psychological, emotional stress, or there's this, are we talking about physical stress because of nutritional imbalances? What kind of stress?
Actually, any kind of stress. Because what happens when you're under stress, your body will switch from making progesterone to making the stress hormone cortisol. And that has been shown, at least anecdotally, in meetings with women who have survived breast cancer. And the one thing they all had in common was a stressful event before their diagnosis.
I have seen that over and over again in people that I work with, that when you start to talk about life events with them prior to their diagnosis, yes, they've experienced something extremely stressful.
And here's something else that women should be aware of, especially with Angelina Jolie, recently, having her bilateral mastectomies because she had the breast cancer gene. Women who have the breast cancer gene and therefore associated with an increased risk of breast cancer are also particularly vulnerable to radiation-induced cancer.
Wow.
So, for example, in Europe, they don't do mammograms on women with the gene because of that reason.
Very significantly important information. Dr. Slavin, what do you think of the whole concept of the individual, the woman with that breast cancer gene, but keeping a review about their hormone levels and working with them with supporting their vitamin D levels, supporting their progesterone levels? Is that sufficient to overcome the genetic anomaly they have?
I think it is. I mean, one approach is like Angelina Jolie, just cut everything away. But I think it makes more sense to just keep yourself healthy and don't rely on a mammogram because that doesn't keep you healthy, and mammograms don't lower your risk of getting breast cancer either.
Here's my thought process with regard to that BRCA gene and not being aware of vitamin D levels, immune function, overall inflammatory markers in your body, that possibly that genetic weakness could manifest in other ways besides breast cancer? And does it mean that by removing that breast tissue that you're completely safe? I can't imagine that that BRCA gene doesn't go beyond just that concentrated breast tissue.
Well, I'll just say this. How many women have been treated for breast cancer and get a recurrence?
Isn't
Okay.
that the truth? And they've been treated with breast cancer, total mastectomy, and then, yeah, potentially there's a recurrence.
So rather than giving yourself a false sense of security with mammograms, be proactive and take the necessary steps to lower your risk of developing breast cancer. And here are some of the things you need to do. And it's not just for breast cancer prevention. This is for good health in general and all disease prevention. So one is avoid sugar, especially fructose and processed foods. How do people go about doing that, Janet?
Okay, avoid processed foods. You don't eat anything that comes out of a box. You don't necessarily shop from the frozen shelves in your supermarket. One of the things that you say all the time, Dr. Slavin, is shop the perimeter. Fresh foods, so that's important. And I have a huge focus on avoiding genetically modified organisms. And you can find that if you're choosing organic foods.
I think a lot of people, if you watch what people buy in the supermarket, you don't see any fresh produce or
Oh,
natural meat, right? Everything comes in
heartbreaking.
cans
Right?
and boxes.
Right.
So after you avoid sugar, especially fructose, and those are all found in processed foods, you want to, as you just mentioned, I think you just mentioned vitamin D levels. You want to optimize those.
And what level would you say is optimization of vitamin D? Because the range is 30 to 100.
Yeah. Well, don't listen to your doctor on this one, because he just thinks being in range is optimal.
Right.
Because so many people are either below that range or around 30.
I see people all the time who are at 35 and their doctors have told them they're fine.
And I tell people I like to get you up to around 80. Mm-hmm. You know, even being 100 is fine. You're not going to really experience any of the side effects that you might read about. And the doctors tell you, oh, it's going to raise your calcium level. Just haven't seen that. But if you're going to take the vitamin D doses necessary to get those to those levels, it's about 10,000 units a day, you need to have your blood levels checked. Just to see where they're going. Another big factor in good health and cancer prevention is your digestive tract. You know, the fancy term is the microbiota of that, meaning all the bacteria found in your digestive tract. Actually, there are trillions of bacteria. There are more bacteria than the cells of your body, and there are and this affects inflammation and metabolism. It's probably the most important thing you can do is make sure that you have a healthy digestive tract.
With those beneficial bacteria found in your lower digestive tract, you're going to maximize the ability to absorb B vitamins and all of the different minerals that are significantly activating for your immune system.
And this is a whole new topic about digestion and how do you optimize that. But if you're having symptoms of poor digestion, and there are a lot of those, that's why you have aisles in the drugstore for treatments for poor digestion, whether it be for gastroesophageal reflux, constipation, diarrhea, bloating. That's lots of products out there. These are for people that have a dysfunctional digestive tract, and those treatments aren't making it functional. They're just treating the symptom. It's multifactorial what you have to do to correct that. You got to avoid foods that make it worse. You have to chew your food to begin with. Digestive enzymes may be helpful for some people, taking probiotics for others. Sometimes you have a dysbiosis, meaning you have the wrong bacteria growing in your gut, and you may need to remove those wrong bacteria through different natural products. Sometimes we have to use antibiotics, but we save that for last. Sometimes you might have an overgrowth of yeast, and that happens in people that have taken antibiotics. Then I always remember what I say: How do you get antibiotics without a prescription?
You eat a standard American diet that has commercial beef and poultry and farm-raised fish.
So, this is, like I said, this is a complicated topic. Mainstream medicine, if you go to a doctor with a digestive problem, he says, well, let's do an endoscopy and make sure everything is good. He says, well, we didn't find anything bad. And now what? You still have the symptoms.
Okay, so they're going to say that there's inflammation. And once again, if there's inflammation, the risk to your overall health is pretty significant.
Now, another area to think about is your protein intake. It's been found that eating too much protein is
really
a risk factor for accelerated cancer growth.
Okay, so the quality of the protein or the source of the protein doesn't matter? Or are we talking about, again, standard American diet where the protein source would be livestock that's been treated with antibiotics and hormones?
Well, it's always better to eat a better protein than a poor protein. But in general, the recommendations to have about 1 gram of protein per kilogram.
Okay.
So that would translate between 40 to 70 grams of protein a day. Here's a big one, because I think, and you'll tell me this, years ago, soy became extremely popular. I was wondering, is it still as popular as it used to be?
No, people avoid it like the plague because they've been told that it will create an estrogenic response. And there are two sides to that story. The phytoestrogenic response will actually plug into the estrogen receptor sites on the cell and reduce your own endogenous production of estrogen, which may be a good thing. So there is a question. And of course, my suggestion is it must be organic, because the predominant production of soy in the United States is genetically modified soy.
Now, I remember there was a company, I don't remember the name, but they had a very big line of powders, you know, to mix with stuff. What was the name of that company?
I don't remember either, but I know around? I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen their
brand?
Advertisements for a number of years, and it's interesting because I do look for them because I know of certain people having had a very important connection and ultimately dealing with breast cancer.
But nowadays, I guess you can find soy protein, but you can find a lot of other proteins like pea protein, rice protein. What are some of the other proteins out there?
Egg white protein, hemp protein, wide range of different types of proteins to satisfy people who wish to follow a vegan approach and people who are interested in using whey protein, which is very absorbable and supportive of glutathione, which would be a benefit to your immune function. Egg white protein, also very, very easily absorbed.
I remember what they used to say. The Japanese have a very low incidence of breast cancer, and they eat a lot of soy, therefore eat a lot of soy. But the difference is they're eating fermented soy and not in large amounts.
The other negative with regard to soy is soy has the potential to suppress thyroid function. And when there is thyroid dysfunction, the risk of breast cancer is raised.
And another recommendation, and you really can't do this without testing, and that's improve your insulin and leptin receptor sensitivity.
Very, very important. There are blood tests that would evaluate leptin levels and fasting insulin levels.
The way you can do it without testing is avoid sugar, avoid grains, and restrict your carbohydrate intake. In fact, your carbohydrates should really be just from vegetables.
And that's what I was going to say, because a lot of people, when you start to talk to them about carbohydrate intake, they don't understand that the vegetables are carbohydrates, and that intake is very, very important, and a wide array of vegetables, not just simply focusing on green leafy vegetables, but vegetables of all different colors, all different types.
Now, exercise is also important. One of the benefits of exercise is that it lowers your insulin levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because exercise is one of the few things you can do to lower your blood sugar even without insulin.
Right.
What exercise also does is triggers apoptosis, you know, programmed cell death.
We like that very, very much. That's your body's natural approach to maintaining that proper level of cell function all throughout your body. Healthy cell function.
Now, I know how most people feel about body fat and being overweight. It's really all about looks and nothing more. But studies have found that the number of tumors decrease along with body fat. So when you start exercising properly and eating properly and the weight starts coming off, you're reducing your risk of cancer. Also, exercise helps lower your estrogen levels. So that's reducing a risk factor for breast cancer.
That's a very important statement, that exercise will lower estrogen levels. I'm thinking that that most likely is something not very many people know.
And don't focus on, you know, what I tell people, don't focus on your weight and on the scale. You focus on living healthy, you know, exercising, eating properly. The weight, you'll lose weight naturally if you're treating your body properly. Just a couple other things, because we're running out of time for this session. You want to drink organic green vegetable juice daily if you can. Now, you can either juice it yourself. There are a lot of good green powders that you can mix up for yourself, but that's a good source of nutrition. Omega-3 fats, extremely important.
Very important.
You know, that's the fish oil. And I like the fish oil better than the flaxseed, because sometimes your body can't convert the flaxseed or the essential omega-3s to the EPA and DHA.
It's a very significant conversion process, and unless things are very, very well balanced, that conversion doesn't happen.
Using curcumin as a supplement can be very helpful, not just for cancer, but for reducing inflammation.
You can buy the fresh curcumin root or turmeric root and add it to foods. Very pleasant.
And here's a controversial one. Avoid drinking alcohol, because sometimes you hear the benefits of alcohol and then you hear the risks of alcohol. Alcohol actually increases estrogen levels.
Very interesting.
So, you know, that may be the reason you want to avoid electromagnetic fields. Just a quick aside, we had a patient, a female patient, kept her cell phone tucked into her breast, into her bra, and she developed breast cancer just where the cell phone was.
I tell my friends all the time, don't carry it in your pocket. Don't put it into your bra. I see that so many women doing that.
Birth control pills are associated with the increased risk of breast cancer. The synthetic hormones are. If you can do hormone replacement, use the bioidentical hormones. Remember, balance is important. Avoid your exposure to these environmental toxins, BPA, phthalates, and other xenoestrogens. Oh, make sure you're not iodine deficient. That's
very important. And how do your patients do that, Dr. Slavin?
We supplement them with iodine.
How do they know that they're getting enough? You do a blood test, and how many doctors do an iodine blood test? It's so basic, and you think about all of the things that are displacing iodine in our bodies, the chlorine, the bromine, and the fluoride. We're exposed to those every day, and you need to know what your iodine levels are, and you can do that with a blood test.
And I guess down in Florida, we're in the barbecue season all year round, but charred meat is another risk factor. And lastly, avoid GMOs. You mentioned that about the soy, but across the board, and the best way to avoid GMOs is to, and that's genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered organisms, is to eat organic.
People would be amazed at how many different vegetables are genetically modified. And the way to avoid that genetic modification, as you said, eat organic. And to all of our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to NaturalDocRadio.com. We'll be back again soon with more information to help you support your good health. Bye-bye.